here now are my guests, trumpeters Scott Thornburg and Bob White of the Western Brass Quintet. Gentlemen, you're performing tonight at 7:30 p.m., and we're here to preview the concert. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Kara.
Nice. Thanks for having us.
I know you're very, very busy musicians and teachers and soloists, orchestra musicians, but as members of the Western Brass Quintet, that must be an important role for you also. This quintet goes back to 1966?
Yes.
1966.
Yeah. It's a very important part of our positions here as faculty members, you know, having the resident brass quintet with faculty members in it and having it, you know, it's a part of our assignment, part of our jobs, and that's something that's becoming rarer in this day and age where there are a lot of schools of music who no longer support faculty ensembles to the extent that we do here. So it's a great part of our lives as musicians, and it's a great part of our association with Western Michigan University. It's a particularly gratifying part of it. The teaching is obviously very gratifying, but to be supported as we are as performers is a great thing.
I love that this quintet can count itself among the handful of genre-breaking quintets that established the genre, really. If it was created within a decade or two of the other first brass quintets of the 20th century.
That's right. The New York Brass Quintet, for example, really just sort of emerged in the 1950s and was kind of the standardized version of a brass quintet. And, you know, interestingly enough, we're actually playing a couple of works tonight that are strongly associated with the New York Brass Quintet. That group sort of dissolved around 1984 from its previous form, but there's still lots of professional brass quintets in New York, of course. but it's been a real source of driving new music, commissioning composers and things like that to create works for this configuration. And it's great to be able to have that music to look back on.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about how you went about choosing pieces for tonight's concert. There's no big anniversary this year, like
that's
there was
true.
Last.
Thank goodness, that was exhausting. as we always do, you know, we brainstorm well ahead of time. You know, last year, what sort of pieces anybody wants to program, we always look to the archives, think back on pieces that we've played and enjoyed, and believe are worthy of being dusted off and brought out again. We're always looking for new music, and we have a brand new piece, you know, a young American composer on this recital tonight. So we read a number of things like that, pieces that had been sent to us or composers we had contacted, heard that they had a brass quintet, and we get music sent to us, or we read through a lot of material like that. We did choose one of those to program this semester. We chose a couple of sort of comfort food pieces that we love, pieces that we know our audience will love. You mentioned the big anniversary, the ongoing celebration, and the recording that we're working on that we did at the end of the last academic year. We recorded in May, and we had a very active year with a lot of new music, very intense new music to learn. We recorded a lot of that stuff in May. And one of the realities of programming this year was to have a nice program, some new music, but to maybe not kill ourselves in
sure.
the process.
But, to wax and wane.
Which is not to say that this is an easy program. They never are.
Right,
but
right.
We did bring out a couple of Warhorses pieces that we really love, that we wanted to visit again, and I think those will be well received.
Well, I will mention to listeners that there are four pieces programmed for tonight, which starts at 7:30 p.m. At 7 o'clock, you can arrive early for a live and interactive portion of the program and get to know the performers in the program a bit better. Charles Collier Jones is the first piece. It's a piece called Four Movements for Brass, then a work by Hilary Purlington, Heartbeat Without Rhythm. Then we have, I think, the piece you were alluding to that the American Brass Quartet, or the New York Brass Quintet, made popular, Alvin Ettler's quintet, mm-hmm. with just metronome markings as movements.
mm-hmm. Yep.
And then John Stevens' Seasons for Brass Quintet.
Yeah.
He's a player, right?
He's a tubist.
He's a tuba player.
Taught for a long time at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's actually the another university which has a very active faculty brass quintet. And he was a member of the group and also a very active composer. So he created that piece. And it's interesting. I was talking to John Ailey, who's one of the trumpet professors at University of Wisconsin, recently retired. And he was describing that work's evolution and its reception once it was performed. And he really, and I think rightly, views it as a turning point in brass quintet repertoire in terms of opening up new avenues of expression and making, once again, this thing happens in waves every 20 or 30 years, making many composers regard the ensemble as a serious medium to write music for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a beautiful piece, very expressive, nostalgic, but also very advanced in the kinds of techniques it uses, too. It's a great piece.
Yeah. I think I saw a piece of, I enjoyed a piece of John Stevens on a recent release from Gaudete Brass.
Mm, right. Mm-hmm.
Chicago-based group. Yep. Mm-hmm. Also doing a good job of keeping brass music on the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take a quick look at the first movement, or first work on the program, Charles Collier Jones, Four Movements for Five Brass.
Great.
Would you talk about the piece, the movement we're going to hear?
Yeah, I think we're going to hear, correct me if I'm wrong, a couple of the movements from that, the waltz, which is the third movement, and then the fourth movement, which, if memory serves, is just marked allegro. These are both very bright and jazzy pieces. The harmonic language is borrows a lot from jazz, but it also has some, it plays with your expectations a little bit. Everyone knows a waltz is in 3/4, for example, boom, chick, chick, boom, chick, chick. This one wobbles a bit from time to time, adds an extra beat here or there.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of fluctuates between, you know, really gentle statements and really aggressive statements. And then the allegro is just this really just sort of beautifully lyrical, but also really rhythmically active and punctuated thing, too. So it's a really great little piece.
Yeah, and it's the first time I'll be hearing music of Charles Collier Jones,
yeah,
new composer to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's hear the third and fourth movements from the Four Movements for Five Brass.
Great.
Well, that was a big setup for nothing. Sorry,
technical
guys.
Technical difficulties.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to stick with. Just technical difficulties.
That's okay.
But we have some backup music,
mm-hmm,
to talk to. And let me remind folks who tuned in during the silence that my guests here today are members of the Western Brass Quintet, Scott Thornburg and Robert White, the two trumpeters who would never allow such a mishap to happen in a concert.
If you say so, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think you can depend that there will be great live music tonight at 7:30. The Bullock Performance Institute series is online at the School of Music website, and there will be tickets taken at the door, or you can find them through the MillerAuditorium.com box office. We have to skip the Charles Collier Jones for now, we can look ahead to the Alvin Ettler.
Sure.
And perhaps you can talk a bit about the significance of this piece while I cue it up.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned before, the New York Brass Quintet sort of made this piece famous. Ettler actually started his career as an oboist. He actually won a gig with the Indianapolis Symphony back in the late 1930s, but started having success as a composer too, Guggenheim fellowships and things like that, and he decided to put his energies into composition. And this piece from 1963 actually represents a turning point in his composition too. He started experimenting with serial procedures, pitch material in the 12-tone manner, but it also, he was already strongly influenced by jazz and by the rhythmic and harmonic language of jazz, and so there's sort of an interesting fusion of those two things. It's not a tonal piece, but not to scare anybody off from listening to it, it has lots of very really compelling musical gestures happening that are very accessible and coherent, even if you can't find the key quite as cleanly as you might in some of the other pieces we're playing.
Right. And on today's programs, a piece that uses atonality, intermixed with pieces that do use traditional mm-hmm. harmony, can just be terrific by way of contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gets to show off certain qualities of the brass quintet in ways that you can't get through harmonic music.
Yeah. Always. Well, and there's a lot of emphasis on color, and all of us here are using a variety of mutes throughout the piece, the choreography of which may be more entertaining than a lot of the other things happening on the concert. We'll see. It depends on how many mutes I drop this time, I think. And also, funny techniques like pressing the valves down halfway on the trumpet, which makes kind of a sort of a non-pitched percussive sound. So it's a cool piece. It really is. That's a great way to describe it. I think it's cool. You listen to it and you go, boy, that is really cool.
But I think that's an interesting point, that it's the piece on the program that will sound the most modern of any of the other pieces, although it's 50 years old.
Yeah, it's one of the older pieces on the program.
So it comes from an era when there was widespread experimentation going on with composers, and the brass quintet was an excellent workshop for that, for many composers to try out new systems of organizing pitches and dealing with tonality. And many of those pieces, from this distance now, 50 years later, aren't cool. They sound dated and even a little bit quaint. And I think one of the things I've always respected about this Ettler Quintet is that it has held up over this time. It's a piece of a distinct era of experimentation in the 60s. And yet it still is a really fantastic piece. It really works well. It's so well crafted that it still is effective. It doesn't sound dated.
Do you have any idea if the Western Brass Quintet took up this piece when it was pretty new?
Well, it's been played over the years a number of times. I'm sure it was. I know the part that I'm playing from is ancient, so and well worn and well written on, well notated. Mm-hmm. And some of them are my markings, and some of them are my predecessors. So I do think that the piece was played certainly in the 70s. And we played it in the 90s and again in the early 2000s. So it's been well used. It really is a classic. It's a standard brass quintet. It's a standard part of the brass quintet repertoire. So it's a piece that should be visited again and again.
Well, Bob, you recommended we start with the second movement.
Yeah, I think the second movement is really got some cool features. For one thing, it's in 5/8 meter the whole time, which, not to get too technical about it, the inspiration for it, I believe, is the Morse code for SOS, which sort of fits nicely into a 5/8 meter, but it's passed around among the group, and there's a general sense of, well, panic in this music, I think. It's sounding an alarm. But it's really neat. Lots of trombone glissandos and fun stuff like that, too. So I think you'll enjoy it.
piece by Alvin Ettler. We heard the second movement, quarter note equals 132. So romantic.
Eighth note equals 264, in other words.
From his quintet, and my guests are two-fifths of the Western Brass Quintet, Scott Thornburg and Robert White, Bob White, and we're missing Lynn Folk, Daniel Mattson, and Jacob Cameron. They're the
missing
other.
Them terribly.
Together, you guys must have a lot of fun when you do get together for these concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the recording project, and I'd like to hear any more teasers if you have.
Yeah, well, it's all of the tracks have been laid down. Now we just the process of editing it, because we're all trying to work on that while doing our normal teaching and playing duties. It's proved to be a slow process, but it is in progress, and we're hoping that by the early part of the summer, the basic structure of how it's all going to be laid out is going to be done, and then it's just a matter of having our engineer master it and mix it, and then we'll be working on getting it distributed on CD and digitally as well.
I thought you were going to say, and then we'll throw a big party.
Well, that's always a possibility, and we're eager to do that as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It would be a little, I would like to be able to promise a CD in the fall, but I want to be cautious about making promises like that. But that's, that certainly is our goal. I mean, we would love to be able to present a new Western Brass Quintet recording to the public next year. It would be great.
It'll be wonderful, Bob, because it'll be the first one that you take part.
That's true. Yeah. Which, is only slowing down the process even more. Every track I listen to, I think, well, can I live with that one going out? No, but it was a great, great project, great music, a number of new pieces, as Scott mentioned, for us. And, man, it was really intense.
The concert tonight, featuring music of Charles Collier Jones, Hilary Purrington, Alvin Ettler, and John Stevens, starts at 7:30 p.m., and it begins at 7 with a sort of pre-concert, live and interactive session with the musicians. Bob, you're the one who's usually there for all of these concerts to host the pre-concert.
Well, I have to be there tonight. I don't have any excuse. We'll all sort of sit and chat a little bit about it before the concert, so it'll be informal and relaxed. And during the program, too, we'll be telling the audience a little bit about the pieces that we're about to play. I always like that feature of the BPI concerts because it gives me a chance to talk to guests and find out more about how they've, creatively arrived at the things they're playing or the way their groups were formed. Obviously, in this case, we already, among ourselves, know the answers to those questions, but it still is nice to be able to interact with the audience about it before we sit down and play. So,
yeah. Well, I like interacting with you, too. I feel privileged that, I get a one-person discussion every morning on WMUK. I should remind listeners, if you're hearing us now and you appreciate these previews of live music happening in Kalamazoo, that you can voice your support with a pledge at WMUK.org.
Do it now.
Thanks, Bob. Well, I did manage to cue up the piece we intended to hear earlier.
Oh, right.
I'd like to give it a try.
Yeah.
Let's hear this waltz by Charles Collier Jones from his Four Movements for Five Brass.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's music of Charles Collier Jones, his four movements for five brass. And I see that his dates almost echo those of Alvin Ettler.
Yeah, although I should point out that through no fault of the people who drafted the program, those dates are actually not the right dates. this Charles Collier Jones, his dates are 1928 to 2013. And strangely enough, he passed away, this is just a weird coincidence, in Punta Gorda, Florida, where Western has a satellite campus. And we have aviation program and music therapy and a bunch of other things being offered down there as degrees. I think it's also a popular retirement spot, too. So, but this Charles Collier Jones, he was a composer who studied at Yale. He was also active as a jazz pianist and music teacher, and spent part of his life as a commercial lobster fisherman. How that all happened, I don't know. But he liked boats, I guess. So.
And, you know, maybe it pays better than music.
Maybe, I don't know.
We don't want to talk about that.
But this piece, too, this is another one that's strongly associated with the New York Brass Quintet. I suppose the Yale connection, a number of the original members of the New York Brass Quintet taught at Yale, and so there was probably some connection made there, and he was one of the first people to write them an original piece. He was the very first set of published works they put out. This piece is among those. So,
wow.
And as you heard, it's, you know, it's really light but also beautiful. So we enjoy playing it.
Very, very melodic piece. Mm-hmm. And surprising you can put, you know, two contemporaneous folks together. Yeah. And have such different music on the same program.
Yeah.
And so the program begins with music of Charles Collier Jones. And what we can't hear today is this piece by Hillary Purrington.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing this is correct. Is it a woman?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Born in 1990.
Yep. Just a youngin'. She's the probably the youngest composer we've played something by since I've been here, for sure.
I think that's true.
Yep. And
How did you discover this piece?
Well, actually, it was through our trombonist, Dan Mattson. He's a well-connected guy with composers. And I believe he was contacting another composer, although I can't remember who, about the possibility of writing a piece. And this composer said, you know who you should check out is my friend Hillary Purrington. She has this great brass quintet that's just a couple years old at this point. And so he looked it up, and he emailed her, and she sent him a score and sort of a recording of a reading of it that was done. And we all listened to it, and we thought, this is really nice. And it's a beautiful piece. It has, it's kind of hard to describe. The musical language reminds me a little bit of the composer David Lang, who's someone who recently won the Pulitzer Prize, writes a lot of choral music. Although it's not really like David Lang. There's just things that remind me of it.
If people were listening a week ago last Friday, they would have heard selections from the Little Match Girl Passion.
Oh, yeah, beautiful
because
piece.
There was a local performance of the Pulitzer Prize-winning piece by David Lang. And, yeah, I was terribly impressed with his use of intensity and silence at the same
time. Exactly. Yeah. And those are the things that I think you'll notice in this piece when we play it. There's long stretches of really long, sustained tones that sometimes intensify to like a scary degree. And then there are long silences. There's a lot of sort of rhythmic things that repeat in kind of an ostinato way. And then there's just some really beautiful, lush harmony in it, too. Very tonal and just really an emotional piece, very expressive piece.
I've been wondering about music, practicing music and meditation lately. I don't meditate really myself, but I'm thinking of dabbling, getting started. Kenny Werner visited last month. And
Effortless Mastery. It's a great book.
And he has some tapes even you can sort of listen to. And in conjunction with that, when you bring up minimalist composers like David Lang, I've always felt my own brain almost being taken over by this other, or reordered by the patterns in minimalist music. I'm just inviting your thoughts on with the music's power to just take you out of your daily self.
Yeah, well, it definitely has that. And, you know, a piece like Purrington's, it is one of those things where as each movement ends, you find that you've lost track of time a little bit. You're sort of not aware of the way time's passed the way you normally would from moment to moment. And I think that, you know, it really can sort of clear out some space in your mind, too. that sort of focused concentration, but also in a relaxed way. That's what meditation teachers are proclaiming to show us how to do, and rightly so in most cases. But if you're someone who practices music, that's a familiar experience, I think.
Mm.
Well, it can be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the opposite experience is what you have when you practice. But
evoke anxiety in your playing. Yeah.
Exactly, right. But it, you know, it's that experience of dealing with things exactly as they are right now in this present moment. You can't pretend it's any other way than it is right now, whether that's good or bad. You don't have any control over that. That's a very common experience for musicians, I think. And so there's a very strong relationship from what you're describing, I would say.
Scott, do you have anything to add?
I with regard to this piece, this Purrington Quintet, Heartbeat Without Rhythm, I think she has a unique perspective on the use of the brass quintet and even on the organization of musical thought. I think it's not like other pieces that are typically written for brass quintet. I don't think she uses the ensemble, the voices of the ensemble, in the typical way. There's a sparseness to it. There are great powerful moments where she really does use the full forces, but there are also sparse stretches where interesting pairings. And we don't have all five voices playing at the same time, and interesting instrument pairings, and I think it by not delivering what's expected, it involves the listener in a different way. It's interesting. It takes you to an unexpected place and doesn't necessarily do what you might expect it to do. Mm. That's what I have particularly enjoyed about this piece, and we've played it a few times. We did some public school concerts in high schools. We do that every semester. We go out and play for kids and show them what we're doing, the kind of music that we play, and talk about what we do and what we're doing here at the university. And we've tried that piece out a few times this semester that way. And I have to say, I enjoyed that piece. Of all the pieces that we're playing, I love them all. But I enjoyed the differentness of this music. And it puts you in a different kind of mindset from the usual. It just doesn't sound the same as other brass quintets. And when I'm looking for new music for us to play, that's what I'm looking for. I don't want everything to sound derivative of the standard brass quintet repertoire. I'm looking for composers that have an original voice. And I think this one really does.
You'll have to be there at 7:30 tonight to hear the piece. We do not have a recording for you. It's very new. But the Western Brass Quintet is always worth hearing, and they're starting at 7:30 tonight in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at 7 p.m. If you arrive early, you'll catch a little discussion on the pieces and get to know the musicians behind the music a little better. And Scott, I guess that if I could ask for your thoughts on meditation. Do you think of music as meditation at times?
At times, yeah. I do.
Scott's already enlightened, I think, so he doesn't need to meditate.
No, I have the metabolism of a chipmunk. Meditation doesn't take very long for me. I can't sit still for very long. No, I do. I mean, I think it, you know, great music, like any great art, you know, involves the consumer, right? It's compelling, and it pulls you into its world, and you have, whether it's meditative or whether it's just transformative, or it's an experience that you can't really have in the real world, and it's like being lost in a great book, and forgetting to eat, you know, a great piece of music, even in, and especially in live performance, I think, can really do that. I don't necessarily think that, you know, the experience has to be the same for all listeners. You know, it certainly isn't, and it probably shouldn't be. But some of these pieces are provocative, and some of them are inspiring, and some of them are interesting. But all of them have an aural world that is created that you can become a part of for a few minutes. I think that's a kind of meditation. I certainly think it's healthy.
Mm-hmm. To change the concept just a little bit, I wonder what... I think that a lot of music is mental, and performance is mental preparation as well as physical and technical preparation. I know that I've pulled off things I shouldn't be able to pull off just because I could hear it in my head mm-hmm. ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And just punch a little above my class because mm-hmm. The mental was ideal was helping me mm-hmm. reach it. And with the instrument you play, trumpet is famously a bit of a high wire act at times. And I think when you know, say you're sitting in the back of the symphony, you know you have to hit something kind of impossible at the drop of a hat. Mentally, do you prepare for that? Do you calm yourself down? Do you focus on the what's about to happen? How do you, both of you have this experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very real, you know, physical technical preparation that has to be in place that we deal with on a daily basis. But you know, in the moment, the trick is staying fully in the music, and just really hearing it. Really singing it into the instrument. And I really kind of literally mean that. Like, I try to convince my body that I'm not about to play this lick on the trumpet, I'm about to sing it. And that fully engages the part of my brain that we call the musical ear, and fully embeds me in the music, which is where I need to be for it to work right. And then I'm not thinking about the technical, the nuts and bolts technical stuff at that point. I'm just singing the music. I think that also serves to, for performers, to put our egos in the right place in this equation, so that every performance isn't about what will they think of me, but it's more about, listen to this. This is incredible music that I have for you today. Listen to this. And, you know, I don't want to be publicly humiliated by sounding bad, and I worry about that on some level, but in the moment of performance, I really consciously try to set that over to the side, because I don't think in that moment it's not about us as individuals or as egos. It's about what we brought to share.
Mm-hmm. Well put. Yeah. No, that's great. I think that's been, especially for brass players, a real, it seems like common sense to a large degree, but pedagogically for us as teachers, we've seen, you know, maybe the past 40 years or so, this whole idea of that you're singing the music in your mind as you play it with the most beautiful, ideal version of sound for your instrument that you can imagine. It's proven to be very powerful pedagogically, and I think it's sort of helped brass players move ahead a few notches artistically in recent decades. You know, because there's a lot of other mechanical things we could be thinking about. We could be thinking about what our embouchure feels like at this moment, like, oh boy, that hurt. I think my lips are swelling up, or, you know, things like this. It's very easy to get distracted by those kinds of stimuli as they're happening. But if your mind is focused with something else, something that's as all-consuming as hearing the music in your brain. It really does help mitigate all of that and do your best, such as it may be, you know.
And it almost goes to the core of our most primitive selves of just wanting to be part of something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And
well put, yeah.
And say it, and say it well. We have a few minutes left to talk about John Stevens, the
such a great piece
tuba player who is also a wonderful composer and based in Wisconsin. You said.
Yeah, is he still there, do you know?
I think he's still in Madison.
He's retired,
yeah.
So.
I know him from way back.
Oh, yeah?
He his first college teaching job was at the University of Miami. And
oh,
he started
right.
there when I was a senior in my undergraduate years at the University of Miami. He came in as this young tuba professor who had moved down to Miami from New York. And he was very energetic and very helpful with my student, with the brass quintet that I played in, student brass quintet. And he coached us a little bit and offered a lot of advice, professional advice, as we moved on. And then years later, I got to know him as a colleague after he had moved up to the University of Wisconsin, Madison.
He must have a huge ego because he wrote a piece called The Seasons.
In fact, it's subtitled Symphony for Brass Quintet.
Wow.
It's a big work. As brass quintet pieces go, it's... it's of big proportions.
Is he really trying to have Vivaldi move over? Or
I sort of doubt that he was thinking of it that way. I think that the what's remarkable about his musical language is how eclectic it is. In my opinion, there's a lot of influence from not just jazz sounding harmonies, but even rock and roll. I mean, there are some very rock-derived things that happen, although you might not think of them that way as you hear it. But some of the things we play, if you imagine them played by electric guitar, it's like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer or, you know, something like that. but he, you know, I think he's a very down-to-earth musician and actually, you know, rather than having a lot of pretense about making Vivaldi move over, it's probably more the opposite, to just sort of... he really brings in sort of a human, almost sentimental regard for the seasons here. The work opens with spring, and it's this kind of murmuring, burbling, you know, thawing sound of life sort of getting going again in a variety of ways. And summer, of course, everything's in full swing, and it's just this sort of rollicking, crazy act of music. Autumn is very tender and nostalgic. And sort of foreshadows the coming of winter. And winter is jagged and icy. But like all seasons, it ends. And by the end, you hear it returning to the texture of spring, which opened the piece. So it really is a beautifully conceived work. And it's a very direct experience, musically and emotionally, I think, for the listener.
I like that. The winter, summer, spring, and fall he's thinking of is exactly like the one we experienced.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
John Stevens.
Wisconsin style, right.
Well, once again, the Western Brass Quintet takes the stage at 7:30 tonight to perform a full concert of music by Charles Collier Jones, Hilary Purrington, Alvin Ettler, and John Stevens. And my guests here today have been Scott Thornburg and Robert White, the two trumpeters of the Western Brass Quintet. I insist we listen to Summer from this
That's
piece. I'm not interested in fall or winter. So.
Right.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Kara.
Have a great concert tonight.
Thanks.